three readings today, after days and days of laboring over this, are impossible to coordinate, I think. And we have Job, we have Paul, Mark's gospel. And the only thing that holds them together, of course, is the fact that the Jews, whose book this is, affirm these as authentic expressions of religious faith, of a life lived consciously in faith in God. And so, what I thought I might do, attempt to do, is to talk about these three quite disparate texts as examples of stages of faith, periods in one's life. Because I think that's one of the very useful things. This may be my Jesuit training, about which I'm not about to boast, by the way. I didn't much like the way they did things. But when you made a Jesuit retreat, you were constantly told to use your imagination, enter the scene of the gospel or the scripture passage as you're reading. And there is some utility in that, I think. Okay, so here's Job. Nothing new. This is Job after he has been denuded of everything. His kids, his flocks, the affection of his wife, his health. So we find Job sitting on a dung heap at this point, scraping his ulcers with a broken pot, and his wife yelling at him, "Curse God and die." Job's situation in this little fable that these guys created. In other words, and it's important to remember at this point that the Jews did not believe that there was anything after death. Once you died, you were dead, and that was the end of it. You know, so what span of life you were given was all there was. So what we have here is a faithful man who's saying his life is almost unrelieved pain. That the word that occurs a couple times is I think, really suggestive. I am a hireling. I'm not in charge of my life. I'm not in charge of my world. And there's nobody who attempts to live a consciously religious life who does not enter this kind of period in their life. Remember what they put into the mouth of the dying Jesus, this 22nd Psalm, my God, why have you forsaken me? You know, this puts the skids to all the kind of prosperity gospel preaching that we're getting nonstop on the television. In fact, what is important to see, it is in the very process of being faithful to God that all these catastrophes are visited upon. And so it is useful, I think, to see that this too is an authentic season of faith. This sense of radical depletion. Not hopelessness, because he's still talking to God, but doing so out of the context of a felt absence of God. And this is extraordinarily important for, I think, for us who have this, culturally, this image of the fully developed human being as the one who can look around and she can say, none of this bothers me. I can manage. I'm in charge. And that kind of self-falsification, which I think we see all over our culture, is radically undercut by this cry of unrelieved pain. But please note, that too is a connection to God. Huh? That, too, is a connection to God. And then we have Paul talking about making himself everything to everybody. Did he manage that? I don't know whether he did or not. Scholars disagree. But very interesting, when he says, if I do not, woe to me if I don't preach it. Why? Why? Because he feels he would have betrayed himself. It's not God standing over and saying, listen, Paul, you better get to Philippi tomorrow. No, that's not that at all. It's not this kind of infantile sense of God as the great alien other. But Paul so transmuted in his self-understanding that I cannot be fully myself if I am not fully faithful to God. And of course, this is in a much less troubled state than our friend Job. And then he spells out what this being faithful to God is. In other words, to make himself absolutely available as much as he can. I mean, please don't misunderstand this text as if Paul was a great wimp. You know, all you have to do is read the letter to the Galatians where Paul literally calls Peter a hypocrite, a liar, a fraud, a coward. Here's Paul in this kind of quotidian attitude toward the world. So basically, I'm not here to serve myself. Basically, I'm here to offer myself. And that's, I think that gets us inside what this man is about. And he is that way because he sees himself as imitator of Jesus. And this is the Jesus, of course, we get in all the Gospels in this interesting passage of Mark, just a small footnote. You'll notice that Mark, who's probably the earliest of the four Gospels, qualifies Jesus in a way that the later Gospels never would. He doesn't cure everybody. He doesn't cast out all the demons. A few, many. Well, there's this incapacity on the case of this man to do things too. And you find this over and over creeping up into Mark. Mark's the only gospel that has Jesus' family running after it because they thought he was crazy. The other gospels, when they come to that same passage, wash that all out. Nothing like that. And what's going on, of course, is the belief that this was a deeper understanding of who Jesus was. But to move on. The interesting thing about Jesus is this connectedness with God. Huh? He went off to a desert place where he prayed. So he gets this great raging success. You know, he had all these people chasing after him. He cures all these people and helps all these people. And then this interesting little dialogue. Everybody's looking for you. Man, if somebody said that to me, I'd say, oh my God, is that wonderful. Let's go back into town and, you know, woo, 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 woo. And I said, no, we got to move on, folks. We got to move on. There's something more to be done. I do not rest on my laurels. You know, as I find that even the most meager laurel, even if I can get a laurel leaf, I'm tickled. Tudis, footnote, Tudis sent me an email last night, and one of the sermons was quoted in the thing. Oh, Trojak, are you wonderful? Look at all those people reading this stuff. That's how far I am from Jesus. In other words, this kind of freedom from the need to be reassured, freedom from the need to be secured by my own self-estimation. Yeah. All of which, of course, hobbled me. contains me, makes me unavailable to the world. There's this grandly free man who said, listen, we got stuff to do, folks. Let's go do us. Let's go do us. So, I don't think this is far-fetched. Ignatius of Loyola is probably looking down the old Trojan guy. It worked with you. Fine. Well, maybe it did or maybe it didn't. But what I really believe this is a useful exercise. Because what we're getting in all the scriptures are stories of faith. Stories of faith. With which we can compare our stories. And to be encouraged with a vision of how our story is supposed to develop. I'm still worried, still very much self-engrossed. Life is unjust in all kinds of ways, not just for me, but for everybody. But what do you do with that? What do you do with that? And that's even less important than the further question, how do I get beyond that? And that's where we are right now. How do we get beyond that kind of self-seeking, that kind of nervous self-substantiation that we all need? How do we get to be free? Well, I think that's one reasonable way, I hope you find a reasonable way of looking at these texts and trying to put them together.